Big show for you here today. First staff mock draft of the season. We're coming out of the NFL draft. It's time to do some fantasy mock drafting. Justin Boone joins me as we go round by round talking about the most intriguing picks, some picks we are skeptical of, and some picks we really liked as well. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is it's our guy. It's the man himself. Looking good over there on your end of the show. It is Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, man?
Well, I know I don't have to say this, but we were delayed by like a minute or two there because some technical difficulties, which you'd think by now we would have totally worked out. We've been doing this for 8 or 9 months, and yet you never know. You jump on, you go to put your headphones in, they're not working, you switch to backup headphones. Eventually, we got it figured out, and it only cost us about 60 seconds or so there. So even in the off season, Harmon, there's always something to deal with.
Oh, dude, I mean, if you're ever going to do it, now is the time. I know we're still, listen, shout out to the folks out there that are listening, watching the show. The numbers are still really great. Producer Colin is very happy. You're continuing his will to live, which is great to hear. So the numbers are great, but this is the time to do it, man. Look at us. We're both in hats. It's a casual vibe. We're talking through a fantasy mock draft in May. Okay, if there was ever a time to have some technical difficulties and get slow out of the blocks here, this is the time to do it. So, you know what, Boone? I think it fits our very relaxed vibe that we're going to have on the show today.
Yeah, Harmon hat day is rare. I feel like I'm always the one in the hat. I feel like Tice rocks the hat a lot. I almost never see you in a hat. So it's a special occasion for everybody watching.
That is because I have a haircut at 345. Okay, so I've got a big trip coming up next month, which is going to be a fun month for you in June, buddy. We're starting to tease that out now. We got a big trip coming up, so I got to time out the haircuts every 2 weeks leading up to that trip. So yeah, we've got a haircut coming up later this afternoon, which means that no point in doing the whole deal. So we throw the hat on today for what I said is going to be a very big show here on the program, because we have our very first Yahoo Fantasy Football staff mock draft coming out of the NFL draft. It's time, man. It's time to start thinking about putting together our fantasy rankings. Time to start putting these guys into tiers, into buckets, and figuring out how some of these drafts are going to play out once we get into best ball season, we get into the real drafts in August and everything. So it's time, Boone. We are slowly but surely inching towards when we really ramp up for fantasy football season. And we're going to start that off today with, like I said, going through our very first staff mock draft. We're going to go round by round and share some of our biggest takeaways. So without further ado, let's rip it here. Let's get into our first staff mock draft of the fantasy football season. All right, we've got a big one here today. We're going to go round by round through this draft, and we're going to talk through some of our general takeaways on each round. We're going to look at most intriguing picks. I will talk through some of my picks as well. I know Boone will talk through some of his picks. We'll talk through some of the most contentious and interesting players in each spot. We'll just say, for the people out there, this is a 10-team half PPR, no super flex, none of that stuff, just traditional one quarterback league. We'll get into some more fancy and fun formats as we go throughout the course of the offseason. But for now, just your pretty straight and narrow 10-team mock draft. So here are the picks from the first round of this draft. I'm not going to list off everybody's, you know, names, okay, that were involved in the proceedings. Folks internally were involved here. We're going to leave it at that. Boone and I will again talk about some of our picks along the way. So number one overall was Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, Ja'Marr Chase, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Puka Nacua, Christian McCaffrey, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Ashton Jeanty, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Boone, I would say that the first round here played out pretty much as expected. And quite frankly, like, I would be shocked if the first six picks aren't universally, for the most part, in every single draft, in some order, the six players who went in our first picks here. Anything else from you that was interesting about this first round?
I mean, this might surprise you. I think there's another name that belongs in that group. I think it should almost be seven. And I think this guy should go ahead of CMC, to be honest, this year. And that's Jonathan Taylor, who doesn't go in this round at all. That was a real surprise to me. You think back to what that offense looked like last year, early in the season. He was having all those like three touchdown games. He was producing just massive numbers for fantasy. Late in the year, Daniel Jones gets hurt. Quarterback situation's a bit of a problem. You know, Riley Leonard and 100-year-old Phillip Rivers and, like, you know, those guys coming in. The offense just wasn't the same. Now, is it going to be the same this year with Daniel Jones coming off a serious injury, probably not being able to run as much as he did last year early in the season? I think you could make an argument that maybe we won't see the same kind of offense early in the year. They got to figure things out with Michael Pittman now no longer there. So that's going to change things a little bit. And yet, don't we think Jonathan Taylor is going to get a ton of volume? Don't we think this offense will be better than what we saw late last season? Might not be up to the level that it was early last year, but you look at what, you know, he was doing. He was the RB1 overall. He was averaging 23.3 fantasy points per game in half PPR. That was number one, and that was ahead of CMC by over a full point. So I think Jonathan Taylor has this huge ceiling. I think he's a guy that definitely should be going in round one, and I was shocked that he didn't end up going in here. And I picked second overall, so I didn't really have a chance to take him, but I thought someone would in the first 10 picks.
Yeah, I wrote in my write-up on the draft, which people can find on the website, yahoosports.com, that I did think that the back half of round one, and I do think the six picks, like I said, that's an interesting take on Jonathan Taylor maybe being ahead of Christian McCaffrey, who I do think is, I think Puka and McCaffrey will be the two that people have like the most hesitation clicking for very different reasons. Although, of course, by the time we get around to August, it might not be a big, you know, I don't want to say it won't be a big deal about some of the weirdness of Puka Nacua's offseason and everything, but that might be a little bit more of a comfortable selection by them. But I do think those are the two guys that might give people right now the most hesitation and clicking. So I could see Taylor, if you wanted something just that feels a little bit more secure, taking him over McCaffrey. But generally, I wrote in the write-up that the back half of round one felt a little more like receiver-pilled than I would have expected. There is an argument to be made that because of how quickly receiver drops off, and, you know, just the way that this happened last year, where the wide receiver two to wide receiver three range was very flat, that actually did push up some of the elite receivers. So that was kind of part of my decision-making process of taking Justin Jefferson at the eighth overall pick, that I wanted to lock in a top-level receiver and hit a couple of running back picks throughout the next two rounds. I also am totally fine. I don't know if you disagree, but I'm totally fine like waving Jefferson back into that top five receiver range with Kyler Murray in the mix. I think that's more than enough for Jefferson to be considered as a top five wideout again. But generally, yes, it was a little more receiver pilled picks 7 to 10, where it was CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, and Amon-Ra St. Brown ahead of guys who in ADP might be a little bit higher, like your Jonathan Taylors, your James Cooks, even Devon Achane. All those guys went in round two.
Yeah, I don't mind the Jefferson pick, and, you know, boo-hoo that we're going to say this, but I thought we would get a discount on him, man. I thought we'd get him in the second round this year after the season he had, and yet it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case in best ball ADP.
You might.
Right now,
I just did it.
He's going as a top 10 pick in best ball at the moment. And I mean, I know best ball not the same as redraft, but I tend to view best ball ADP this time of year as kind of indicative of what we normally end up seeing come the summertime, with especially early picks and guys that are making big jumps. You normally see that move happen in best ball ADP. And then once most of the more casual fantasy managers come around in the summer, then we start to see those ADPs kind of reflect the same thing. So yes, Jefferson probably will go in this range. I might have a little bit more hesitancy than you have to take him at eight there. Like I said, I really was hoping that he'd be a guy that we get in the second round, take a running back in round one, and then come back and hope they can get Jefferson. And it's just not going to be the case. Fantasy managers are too smart.
Let's get into that second round range, because for the most part, I don't think there's too much to discuss in the first round, even though we can pull on that Jonathan Taylor thread here, because he kicked off our second round as it went Jonathan Taylor, James Cook, Devon Achan, Brock Bowers, Rashee Rice, Amarian Hampton, Chase Brown, Saquon Barkley, Jeremiah Love, and Drake London here. All pretty good picks. Don't have a ton of issues with how this went here. But again, I bet those first three picks, one of them was mine. I took Devon Achan at the 2.03. Taylor, James Cook, Achan. I mean, I think all those guys are great picks to lead off the second round. None of them have flawless profiles. For Taylor, I do think the Colts offense is destined to take a step back from what it was in the first eight games of the season. So you might not be able to get running back one overall numbers. I'm worried about Achan's receiving ceiling with Tua Tagovailoa moving on, but I think that could be offset by rushing efficiency. James Cook, I actually don't have too many concerns about James Cook. So honestly, all three of those guys feel really good to lead off the second round here, Boone.
Yeah, really solid. And that's a great start, right? If you can start with a receiver at the back end of round one and then come back and get a running back like this, that's just an awesome base. And we've talked, you know, going back to last summer, kind of the way I like to build normally is trying to stay balanced so that you can grab value along the way. And I think in redraft, that's normally a really smart way to play it. Last year, we got a little bit running back heavy at times because of all the value that was around in like the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round when it came to receivers. I think there might be kind of a pocket like that, and we'll talk about it when we get to like the fourth, fifth, sixth round, that there's a lot of decent receivers in that range again, which sort of leads me to do what I did here, which was go running back in the first two rounds. And like I said, the first round, it's kind of decided for me. Jahmyr Gibbs, second overall. I think you're going to take either Bijan Robinson or Jahmyr Gibbs of one of the top two picks. Coming back around, though, I did have a decision to make, and I went with sort of an upside playing another running back in the rookie, Jeremiah Love. I really see a huge ceiling for him, and I think I mentioned on the last show just how strong those running backs that have gone in the top 12 picks of the NFL draft have been for fantasy in their first seasons, basically always giving you top 15 results. So I'm taking a guy there at RB11 who I think can give me potentially even more than that. Yes, I get the concerns about Tyler Algier and whether he could factor in, but we saw Bijan Robinson have a really good rookie season, maybe not a, you know, league winning type of season like he can produce now, but I think he still had a really good rookie year. I think Jeremiah Love's going to have a really strong season as well, even though that's going to be a big decision between him and Kenneth Walker, which was what I was debating at the end of the second, and it allowed Walker to slip into the third.
I called this the most intriguing pick here, which was yours, of Jeremiah Love at the end of the second round. And the reason for that is that I just think his ADP is going to be really fascinating. And I'm hoping that we can get him at the end of the second round range here, Boone, because what I don't want to happen is that just by the end of the summer, he's become what Ashton Jeanty was, which is just, okay, we're going to just wave him into the first round of fantasy draft simply because he's a highly drafted running back. But I actually think because of what happened with Jeanty last year, it's a rookie running back going to a bad team. We might actually get some level of discount here on Jeremiah Love because, like, I've just recently been, because, you know, this is my life, I've just been charting Jack Besh for the year two reception perception drop. And just going back and revisiting that Raiders offense, it was just such, I think it was a uniquely disastrous situation. And I put like 95% of that on coaching. And I just am going to go down with the opinion here that this Cardinals ecosystem, while it's not great, I'm not trying to say that they're going to be this awesome offense, I don't think it will be so bad that it will thwart Jeremiah Love from being a running back one type of player in fantasy. So I really like where you got him at 2.09. He was a very intriguing pick in that regard.
And I think too, the way this is going to play out is that team is not going to be super competitive. That team's going to be trailing in a lot of games, and he's going to be the guy catching a lot of passes out of the backfield. It's not going to be Tyler Algier in that scenario, right? So I think Love is a very solid pick in this range. And you mentioned the Raiders and Jeanty, like, I think it could be similar for Love where the numbers are there, but he's going to require that pass catching production. I'm pretty sure Jeanty had like five receiving touchdowns last year. So it's going to be a lot of that volume helping to prop him up. I don't think he's going to come in and have a massive season on the ground. That will eventually come. But in year one, very solid pick. And we just have this history of guys taken in that range of the first round who come in and produce for fantasy. But going over to the Raiders, I think that a very interesting pick here is Brock Bowers going where he did. It might be a little bit early in my mind for a tight end, but still, he belongs in the second round. And Harmon, I moved him to my tight end one overall over McBride. I think we might have touched on this briefly on the show before, that you look at the setup, right? Last year, McBride had this amazing rollout where Marvin Harrison Jr. got hurt. Jacoby Brissett comes in and just starts chucking the ball all over the yard. And McBride really capitalizes and goes to a new level in his career, right? Remember all the struggles, catching touchdowns, all that sort of stuff. It went away once Brissett got under center last year. But now this season, it's going to be a little different. Now Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be back. Jeremiah Love's going to be there catching passes, like I mentioned, right? Where Brock Bowers, now he's going to be healthy. And I think people might feel a little burned by him last year. But the dude came out, he was over 100 yards in week one, even though he only played about 50% of the snaps because he got hurt and then had some bad production because he was trying to play through the injury. But he's going to be back to himself. This guy is going to be phenomenal. Last year, despite it all, still averaged the fourth most fantasy points among tight ends, missed a bunch of the season, played a bunch hurt. But think back to that rookie year, right? He was the second tight end in fantasy points per game as a rookie. He has the same kind of upside as McBride. And I would argue that now with the setup for the Raiders being better, with Clint Kubiak there, you know, calling plays, huge upgrade, with Fernando Mendoza under center, that's an upgrade, with the moves that they made on the offensive line, Tyler Linderbaum coming in at center, this is a much different scenario than last year. And the biggest thing is that Brock Bowers is going to be healthy going into the season.
I think what's just worth noting here is, and I said since the end of last year that Trey McBride was a fantasy regression candidate, that he was somebody that I think is going to lose a little steam here. He had 694 routes last year, did Trey McBride, which led not just tight ends, it led wide receivers. Second place was his teammate, Michael Wilson, at 630. So again, Trey McBride, 694 routes. The second place tight end was Travis Kelce with 573. That's over 100 more routes than the second place tight end because they were just dropping back and dropping back and dropping back. And I think they will be in a lot of pass first situations this year, but there is going to be some steam off of the Trey McBride. Like, he's going to have some regression just from a raw stats perspective. Awesome player. He's still going to be great. I'm fine with where he went in this draft, which was the third round, but I do think that Brock Bowers over Trey McBride, which is how it went here, should be the consensus opinion. I think that should be the consensus opinion. It might not be, but I think it should be by the time drafts really get rolling late in August.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it will slowly shift to that. And again, it's not condemning anyone's talent, right? I think both these guys are on a similar level talent-wise. It's just the setup. And how often do we talk about the specific scenario for tight ends and how much that matters? You know, which guy are they in the pecking order in the passing attack? That matters. Can they be a one or two? Are they three or four? Because they're just not going to get the volume to produce like a high-end tight end if that's the case. Both these guys are right up near the top. So this isn't a knock on either. But if we have to split hairs, last year it was McBride. Going into the offseason, I also felt McBride. But the more you look at it, I think now Bowers is set up for a really strong season, in part because the Raiders just didn't bring in much at receiver. So there's not a lot of competition for him to be that number one guy and that de facto number one receiver in their passing game.
Yeah, from an NFL perspective, I don't mind the Raiders receiver room. I think it's fine as long as Brock Bowers. I mean, I'm not going to argue that it's not one of the on paper weakest wide receiver rooms in the NFL. I'm not going to argue that, even though I think Jack Besh is going to be better in year two than he was in year one. But that's almost beside the point. Like, I think as long as Brock Bowers is healthy and is Brock Bowers, like, this receiver room is fine enough for Fernando Mendoza's rookie year. And then year two, you go and get your guy at wide receiver, like a true number one. But I don't care what you think of Marvin Harrison. I don't care what you think of Michael Wilson. There's just much more target competition in that room than what Brock Bowers is going to face in Las Vegas. So I think Bowers is going to have an insane target projection this year, much like McBride had an insane target projection last year because of the injuries there. But let's get into round three, where Trey McBride did go off the board here. But we also saw the pendulum swing back to wide receivers after a very running back heavy round two there, where a bunch of different guys went off the board. Round three, Nico Collins, Trey McBride, Kenneth Walker, Devontae Smith, Chris Olave, George Pickens, Derrick Henry, Colson Loveland, AJ Brown, Malik Nabers. Boone, I throw this group of 10 players at you that went the third round. What stands out to you?
We got to be honest. I was shocked by your pick here. I thought Colston Loveland, a player that we absolutely love, a player that we think is going to have a great year, but I thought taking him in the third round, it seemed a little bit early to me. I think if you look at his ADP right now, you could get him in the late fourth, I think even sometimes later than that. And this is perhaps because this is a staff mock at Yahoo and people are dialed in and we're going to take guys a little bit earlier and ADP might eventually catch up to this. But the fact that I got Trey McBride at the beginning of this round and you had to take Loveland at the end of this round, to me, I think I killed you on value there. We'll see how it plays out because Loveland finished the season very strong. He was basically, for those last few games, he was putting up McBride-like numbers. So there is a possibility that at the end of this year, we're looking at him as someone who can compete with those elite guys among fantasy tight ends. But right now, I feel like you could have waited and got him coming back in the fourth and maybe taken someone else there. But we're splitting hairs a little bit in terms of just like trying to get a little extra value out of it.
Yeah, and to be honest, I felt very mixed about making this pick. There's a couple picks I made in this draft that I literally, I'll be honest, I just did for the podcast because I thought it would make for good conversation.
Well, don't say
one
that.
Of them was, dude,
don't let people see behind the curtain. Come on, though.
Listen, oh no. Hey, I'm a transparency guy. Okay, I'm not gonna come in here and say something that I don't believe. And I think for Colston Loveland, third round, I felt pretty mixed about making the pick. To be honest, I just didn't really love the options after Colston Loveland. I mean, both of the two wide receivers that went right after him, AJ Brown, Malik Nabers, both of them make me nervous for very different reasons. I think there's a real cliff concern for AJ Brown this year, and Nabers is, I called him the most interesting pick of this round when I did the write-up because, you know, my own excluded. I wrote all my own picks and my kind of my thought process there. But Nabers, like, he could either be the steal of this draft going at the last pick of the third round, or he could be a guy that's just very, very up and down this year. So I just, those two guys, a little mixed on making them third round picks. None of the picks in the fourth round, including my own in the fourth round, I didn't love over a guy like Colston Loveland. I just think the ceiling is really, really high for him if he hits. If he hits, like, I think he could be better than Trey McBride this year, could Colston Loveland. Like, I think he could catch a ton of touchdowns. He's the, we're going to, for the 100th time, I'm sure we'll talk about the Bears wide receivers later on. But I feel like those two guys are kind of a toss-up, Burden and Odunze. Both guys I like drafting. But I feel the best about Colston Loveland relative to positions, like to positional value and everything like that. So again, I wouldn't say it was like, I'm so confident I'm making this pick in the third round, but I wanted to talk about it because I think he is set up for a massive year. And by the time we get to August, I do think he's going to probably be like a third round, if not early fourth round selection.
Well, it's, can he pick up where he left off? And you look at what he was doing down the stretch. I said, it was like Trey McBride like numbers. Well, 6 for 94 and a touchdown, 10 for 91 and a touchdown, 8 for 137 over his last three. That included Chicago's wildcard victory. So just, you know, great numbers, great production. I think we could see him to get that, but I think just looking at it in terms of where he's going, I would have been shocked if anyone took him, you know, before the mid fourth, I guess. So you were going to have another shot at it. That's why I'm giving you a bit of a hard time there. But I also agree with what you said about Nabers. I think we've brought this up multiple times. Normally Nabers would be going off the board as a top five, top six wide receiver. Here, he ends up going as the wide receiver 14, which is probably the right range, more down in the wide receiver two range. And it's all because of the injury, right? And I don't think people have adjusted enough. If you look at his ADP, wide receiver 7, you look at the Fantasy Pros expert consensus right now, wide receiver 8, that's very high for a guy that suffered a serious knee injury. He also needed a meniscus repair. So now we're talking about an even longer recovery. And then the way he's talked about it too, right? We brought this up on the show where he's kind of suggested he needs to feel like himself. He needs to be 100% or he's not going to be out there. That makes you worried about him early in the season and how long is it going to take him to feel like himself and to produce like what we've seen him produce like in the past.
Last note just on the Colston Loveland pick and defending him going in this range. this is something I think I always bring up when we talk about like, oh, it's like, it's clearly Colston Loveland and Luther Burden's team now. You know, like Roman Dunze is going to be the third target. That's true if you stop looking at it in the regular season, because when you look up the postseason, you mentioned this, like Colson, Luther Burden was like 14 targets, 66 yards in the playoffs. Like, he didn't really have a very good playoff run. Colson Loveland did have a massive run in the postseason. 25 targets led the team. DJ Moore was second with 15. Like, 25 targets, 12 catches, 193 yards. Like, he was excellent through the postseason. So I do think, like, he would, I don't know if he's going to lead the team in targets, but I think from, like, a just again, within his own position, he's going to be the most valuable of these Bears pass catchers. And I want to be in on these Bears pass catchers this year. So yeah, 25 targets in the postseason. That I think makes Loveland an even better looking fantasy selection here. Even if obviously 95% of fantasy analysts just forget that there are games that happen after the regular season ends. But yeah, okay. That's my defense. My minor defense of the Colson Loveland pick that I may have made for 90, speaking of 95%, I may have like made that for 95% just the content here, Boone.
Well, don't worry, because you're not the only one I'm going to give a hard time to. And you do staff mocks like this. Normally, I end up writing a lot of them up and I feel bad when it's like, hey, I got to point out that this was a terrible pick. Producer Colin made a very questionable pick in the fourth round. So we're going to get to that soon.
Well, yeah, we're going to get to that on the other side of the break. And just as we're going to note, he made that questionable pick only because he made a questionable pick in the third round and doubled down on it. But we will expand on that when we come back from this quick break. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing our first staff mock draft here of the 2026 fantasy season. God, it almost makes you happy to be alive to say 2026 fantasy season. Almost. We got a whole summer before we really get into that. But we are talking through our staff mock draft here. Round four begins with two quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Drake May, then Josh Jacobs, Javonte Williams, Kyren Williams, Travis Etienne, Breece Hall, Tedero McMillan, T. Higgins, and Bucky Irving. Boone, you teased it before the break. You wanted to, speaking of teasing, you wanted to tease producer Colin for his pick here. So let it rip. What do you want to talk about here?
Well, our buddy Joel starts the round off with Josh Allen, who I think is a good pick in the fourth round
here. Pick.
I think that's
yep.
A nice one. Didn't necessarily expect another quarterback to go off the board in this round. Producer Colin follows it up. The next pick and takes Drake May. And like you alluded to earlier, it's because he took AJ Brown at the end of the last round. So he's trying to get that combo going there. He's trying to jump ahead of what's probably going to happen in the next few weeks. And we'll see AJ Brown,
which is totally needless in a redraft format to have a stack like this, completely needless, but that's fine.
I mean, in best ball drafts right now, Drake May's going off the board in like the sixth round and like the late sixth round at that. On top of it, like, there are a ton of good quarterbacks, and I don't want to do like a direct comparison to the value that I got at the position, but we're talking about, like, I believe the eighth round, I got Jaden Daniels. In the ninth round in this draft,
that was a great pick.
You know, some of the top quarterbacks, not to spoil it, but like Joe Burrow in the ninth, some guys like that, Caleb Williams in the ninth, like to compare that to Drake May in the fourth, it just makes this, it's not that May is going to be a bad fantasy player. You look at it last year, he averaged the third most fantasy points among quarterbacks, and one of those guys above him was Brock Purdy, only played about half of the season and kind of got lucky in terms of the schedule that he had late in the year and put up some really huge games there. So May is going to be a good fantasy quarterback. I just think, again, it's sort of like the Colson Loveland pick where I'm trying to extract as much value as possible in my drafts, and I just don't think he needed to take Drake May here. I think he could have waited a round or possibly two before he took him.
I agree with that. And I'm also skeptical. I'm kind of written this take in pencil. This is not like, even though I've said it twice now on the show, I am just a little skeptical of AJ Brown and just how much he has left and how good he's going to be for this Patriots offense. There's no question the weapons on paper are going to look better. There's no question the offensive line is likely going to look better, I think, on paper here in year two of Mike Vrabel and Drake May. But I agree with you that, if again, to defend the Colson Loveland pick, like, tight end drops off very quick. To me, there's a massive tier drop from the top three guys, and I would put Loveland in that, to, you know, and I love Tucker Kraft, but he's my tight end four, but he's coming off an injury. There's some questions there. Tyler Warren, Sam Laporta, Harold, like, forget about it. Okay, like, there's a big drop off there. But I agree with you that not only did we get quarterbacks that went off in this draft. I thought your Jaden Daniels pick was great. I could make an argument that Jaden Daniels should be ranked ahead of Lamar Jackson and Jalen Hurts, who both went multiple rounds ahead of Jaden Daniels in this exercise. I didn't even it's a 10 round draft. I didn't even take a quarterback because, like, I don't need to fill a freaking fake team here at the end of May. By the time we got some of the guys going off the board in round 10, I'm like, there's no difference between these guys and, yeah, like Brock Purdy and Dak Prescott. So what's the point of reaching for a quarterback just to put it on the screenshot? So, yeah, I do think the May pick is certainly a little questionable. But he did finish QB2 overall in fantasy points last year. So it's kind of funny. We're saying like QB2. Well, he was QB2 last season. But other picks that stand out to you from this round, I would nominate Bucky Irving. He's another guy. Scott took Bucky Irving with the final pick in the fourth round. If he can regain the trust of the coaching staff and just stay on passing downs in particular and be closer to full health, I think he's going to be an outright steal at running back 19. But I do think there's a lot of variance in his outlook after year two.
Interesting. I thought you were going to say it was a notable pick because you thought the opposite, that you thought it was maybe a bad value here in round four. That's how I view it. I'm very scared of Bucky Irving. I think I've said my piece on this one before, but the excitement in the beginning of the offseason for him was that Rashad White was going to leave, Sean Tucker might leave. Okay, now maybe Bucky Irving gets a bigger share of that backfield, but now we replace Rashad White with Kenny Gainwell, who might even be a better player, like is certainly an overqualified backup, can step right into that receiving role. And then Sean Tucker ends up signing his tender and coming back. So it's kind of the same thing all over again here. And I think that's a problem for Bucky, on top of the fact that, yes, we saw some concerns in terms of, you know, injuries and some weirdness there and him coming back last year. I'm not super worried about that, but I think when you look at him potentially getting more of the pie, being able to expand that way, it's not going to happen with this group that they brought back. It's sort of just a one for one for what we saw last season, what we've seen in recent years. So I'm very worried about Bucky, and I see him more as a low end RB2 for fantasy with not a very clear path, barring some injuries to those other guys, for him to get up into that, you know, top 12, top 15 range. So because of that, I shy away from him. I haven't really ended up with him on many teams at all this year.
Yeah, I guess I probably like just the range of like running back 19, and running backs went off the board like crazy here. So I don't mind Scott grabbing him at the end of the fourth round. Plus again, you just look relative to some of the other picks. Like it's pretty murky once we get into this fifth round range. But I do think there's some good outcomes for Bucky, where last year was a fluke for Kenneth Gainwell. That was just an overinflated passing game total because that's all Aaron Rodgers wanted to do is check it down. Sean Tucker, like, yeah, they used him around the goal line. Were you all that impressed by the Sean Tucker stuff? Like, they kind of barely brought him back this year. I think there are some outs for Bucky Irving to outkick running back 19, but there's no question that I think there are risks. To me personally, I think a lot of the risks are priced in at running back 19.
Yeah, one of, I think, the outs would just be that last year was a disastrous season from an injury standpoint, and Baker Mayfield will be healthier. The receiving core might be healthier, even though Mike Evans isn't there anymore, but they have some other guys that can certainly step up. And the offensive line, which I think we talk a lot about the Chargers offensive line and some other teams, but the Bucs offensive line really went through it last year in terms of injuries. Yep. So you hope for some better injury luck there, and maybe we get something closer to what we saw 2 years ago from this offense. And yes, that in that scenario, that would help Bucky. Is it enough? Even with those guys there, I think taking some of the work, we'll see. But yeah, I think there is a path for him to do better. I just, in my mind, it's a fairly slim path now that we have Gainwell and Tucker there.
Let's get into round five here. And it once again, we're ping ponging back and forth from like a round of receivers, a round of running backs. Here we get back to the wide receiver range. We go Zay Flowers, Luther Burden, Ladd McConkey, Jalen Waddle, Lamar Jackson, Cam Scadabo, Jalen Hurts, Devontae Adams, DJ Moore, Garrett Wilson. So it's all receivers, one running back in Cam Scadabo, and then two quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson and Jalen Hurts. So, Boone, what stands out to you from this round?
Well, this is what I was talking about earlier. If we start at the end of last round and we say, you know, Tetteryl McMillan, wide receiver 15, T. Higgins, wide receiver 16, then we come into this round. Zay Flowers, Burden, McConkey, Waddle. you know, Davante Adams. I think DJ Moore a little bit early, but I don't think he's going to have a bad season. I just don't know if he's a wide receiver two. I think he's probably more of like a boomer bust wide receiver three. Garrett Wilson, perhaps a bit of a cap ceiling in that Jets offense with so many other guys there now. And just with it being the Jets offense that we've seen kind of hold him back in recent years. But you look at some of these names, like I said, Flowers, Bird, McConkey, Waddle, like these are great picks in my mind in this range. And that leads me a little bit towards the approach that we had last year, right? Where you want to make sure you're addressing running back early. Maybe you do spend up on tight end and then come back around. And that's kind of how I built my team. And I know, you know, you said you waited on quarterback. I was kind of approaching this one like I was totally building my team. I wanted that starting lineup early. So I went with the two running backs. I went with McBride, and then I'm trying to backfill that receiver. I got Higgins before this turn, and then coming back around here, took the upside shot on Burden. I'll get a veteran receiver in the next round to add to that and kind of give me some security there. But I think this is a really smart way to build your team again this year. And I didn't say that in the last few seasons. Last year was the first time that we talked about maybe going RB heavy, maybe taking two RBs early and coming back around on receiver. I think that's certainly a solid plan again this year.
I agree with you. I think it's a good plan this year. I'm in lockstep with you that rounds five and round six of this draft, I pretty much like all of the receiver picks. I think they're really good. The only difference between this year and last year is that, and again, this is a 10-team league, so take that in kind of a grain of salt when we're talking about ADPs and stuff like that. But I do think once we got into the seventh round, and especially once we got once we get to like wide receiver 28, I thought the receivers in round 7 to 9 were essentially all the same guys. Frankly, even, I mean, we only had a couple of receivers in round 10. We had, spoiler alert, we got Quentin Johnston, we got Jaden Reed, and DK Metcalf. I think those guys too, like round 7 to 10, all of those guys are basically the same bet, which means I probably do want to secure a couple of receivers in rounds, you know, 4 to 6, essentially, if we're looking into that range. So we're in lockstep there that, unlike last year where I thought it was like, okay, rounds 5 to maybe rounds 8, this year I think it's rounds 5 and 6. Like, that's where you want to take two receivers, just because these guys, all the players we're looking at here, for the most part, are all going to be in two receiver sets. There's not like a slot only guy. Some of them are going to be like the one receiver in heavy personnel packages, which is a big deal this year. And that way they can really dominate targets. So it makes sense that we got so many receiver picks, 7 of the 10 here in this draft.
And Scadaboo being the lone running back, like you mentioned, I think he's an interesting pick in this round. Like, you look at some of the guys that went the round before, I think you could point out some red flags with all of them, but they're generally pretty solid picks. Scadaboo, you get a bit of a discount here, I think, because of the injury, but what a massive winner coming off the NFL draft. Yeah. There was so much concern that they might end up taking Love, or before that in free agency, that because he was coming off that scary injury last year, that maybe they would go out and sign somebody. There was lots of talk that, you know, they could be a spot for a guy like Kenneth Walker. Never materialized. They don't end up taking anybody significant in the draft. So now you bring back Scadaboo. That tells you they must feel at least good enough that he's going to be able to come back and contribute in a meaningful way this year. Tyron Tracy Jr. is there. Devin Singletary's there. Those guys can hold the fort down if Scadaboo's not himself early in the season. But right now, it seems like Scadaboo is progressing pretty well. And if he does, he could come back and be a really, really strong fantasy asset like he was. It was a small sample size, but there was that stretch last year where he became the starter, was getting a ton of volume, was producing pretty well. Can he hold up? Will it lead to another injury with his running style, the way he approaches the game? Perhaps. But when he's out there, I think he's going to be a good fantasy play, and I'm willing to take that shot in this range on him.
Yeah, I called him the most intriguing pick of this round, and it's for a lot of the reasons that you highlighted there. Like, we just saw him run away with the job, essentially, with these same backs last year. And I was just talking about this with Nate and Charles on Football 301. Like, if you look at what the Giants have done this offseason, not shocking, John Harbaugh, head coach, like, they look like a team that's set up to run the piss out of the ball. Pat Ricard, fullback. They brought in not just Isaiah Likely as a tight end. They brought in Chris Manhertz, who's just like a extra offensive tackle at the tight end position. You forget about these guys that we got on the depth chart right now. Like, even Malachi Fields, like, they could get into 13 personnel, and like, Fields could essentially just be like another blocker as the lone receiver on the field. And they talked about, Joe Shane talked about him as a power forward, which I'm kind of hoping means like he's going to play some power slot stuff for this team, because he can get, which it might not, it might just mean he's a jump ball guy and he's going to block, and that's fine. but even that like can help the run game. You know, they brought in Greg Roman to be the run game coordinator, which I don't love Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, getting involved in the passing game. I do love Greg Roman, the run game coordinator. So Cam Scadaboo was like a huge winner for multiple reasons here. Just this entire offseason after the noise that there was going to be like a replacement of him at some point, that did not happen. So yeah, he's definitely not a totally clean profile, injuries, everything like that. But round five, I like him a lot as the lone running back in this round. But let's get to round six here. And Boone, this is a group where you're just seeing like a ton of second-year players in this round. And I think it makes sense, but all the players selected here have like credible upside cases with some murkiness in their outlook here. So this was round six. Tyler Warren, Quinshon Judkins, Jameson Williams, Tucker Kraft, Roma Dunze, Emeka Ibuka, Bashal Tutin, Travion Henderson, Terry McLaurin, Chuba Hubbard. What stands out to you from round six?
I think Tyler Warren, the first pick in this round, that's one that we've talked a bunch about. Josh Downs potentially getting more opportunity with Michael Pittman out of the way, with Alec Pierce as the number one guy there now. I think Tyler Warren's somebody, and maybe I'm buying too much into what the Colts did early in the season, but he was the tight end six through the first 10 weeks last year, and then he dealt with some injuries, and then obviously Daniel Jones got hurt as well, but he was really producing. He had a big role in that offense, and I think now with Pittman out of the way, he's also going to be somebody that's going to get even more volume, and showed last year he could be a really good fantasy producer, so I'm excited about him. And if Daniel Jones isn't running as much, could that lead to more, like we saw in New York at times, more of those short passes, right? Dumping it off a little more. And who's going to benefit? You can see Josh Downs benefit, and you will see Ty Warren benefit from that. So he's a guy that I like in this range. I'm kind of surprised that he's the tight end four here. Clearly, people are looking at our rankings and following our advice, because I've been talking him up, and I've moved him into that tight end four spot in my rankings. And that's not to knock the other guys there. I think Tucker Kraft coming back from an injury is the only thing that makes me a little hesitant. We got a quote from the team today where they're saying they expect him back early in the season. Don't love to hear that, because that makes it sound like he's not going to be back for week one, because otherwise you would have said week one. So we got to monitor that one to see if he's going to be healthy, and that bumps him down a little bit. Otherwise, Tucker Kraft would be right up there as a potential top three fantasy tight end. But I think Tyler Warren is somebody that people should not be sleeping on and is going to be a really nice pick this year.
Yep, I like that a lot. Honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if they paid Alec Pierce all this money, and just not because Alec Pierce is bad or anything like that. Alec Pierce is a really good receiver, but just with a receiver like Alec Pierce, they typically go off when the offense is running pure. And that was what was happening a lot during the first stretch of the Colts season, though he had his big games towards the end of the year as well. Wouldn't surprise me, honestly, if he's like third in catches behind Tyler Warren and Josh Downs on this team. That's not to say Pierce is going to be bad, but like, cause he can make explosive plays and stuff like that. But I really like Tyler Warren, and obviously I like Josh Downs a lot. Other guys in this round, I'll just say quickly, like, I made the Jameson Williams pick. Jameson's always going to be volatile. And quite frankly, like, I would have taken Odunze ahead of Williams if I hadn't taken Colson Loveland earlier, which I don't love to do that sometimes, but I did it here because I didn't want to take two Bears players, whatever. But Jameson Williams was my wide receiver three, which is when I feel comfortable taking a volatile player like Jameson Williams. I can live with his 2 for 20 weeks and be exposed to his upside in that way. What do you make of some of these running back picks? Like, Travion Henderson, I think, is a really intriguing player to me. He was the most intriguing pick to in the round six range. Like, again, I'll come back to this point about the playoffs. I've really had a tough time forgetting how when New England went into the postseason, they essentially just shelved Travion Henderson and played Ramondre Stevenson a bunch. And I think if you just look at these guys and every, like, some of the explosive plays that they made or whatever, is there really any reason to not make this a full, like, to a full blown committee? Stevenson went with the second to last pick in our draft here, 99th overall to you, by the way. So he was running back 36, 10th round, 99th overall. Is there really going to be that big of a gap between these two guys this year? I am a little skeptical of that.
I think Stevenson massively undervalued in this draft. I think he certainly should be going higher, more as a high-end RB3. If not, you know, he could, if it continues the way it was at the end of last year, he definitely belongs in the low-end RB2 conversation. I just think my personal take is, you know, what happened last year is not necessarily the way things are going to go. We're talking about Henderson, a very young player too, right? He's going to have an off season now with the team, a full off season to prepare for next year, hopefully win over the coaches, hopefully start to kind of fine tune some of those little things in his game and continue to earn a bigger role. And I can, he's not the same player as Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm not suggesting he's going to have that kind of career and be a top two fantasy pick in a year or two. But you look back, and I think I brought this up on the show before, you look back to what Gibbs did in his rookie season, final stat line, 945 rushing yards, 316 receiving yards, 11 touchdowns. And despite Stevenson having a ton of work, and I know Stevenson missed a little bit of time last year, but what did Henderson do? 911 rushing yards, 221 receiving yards, and 10 total touchdowns. Like, he put up some pretty good numbers. He flashed a little bit. Yes, late in the year when everything was on the table, they trusted the veteran more. But that's kind of the way it goes often, right? When you have a young player on a team that's making a push for a Super Bowl, they're not always going to put that young player out there and put their faith in his hands. I think Henderson will have a shot to continue to earn more. If not, turn this into 50-50, you know, maybe take on slightly more than that. That's kind of the way we saw it go with Gibbs and David Montgomery, right? At one point, Gibbs was a little bit behind him. And then eventually Gibbs, year after year, started getting more work in all facets and became a really good player. So I think that will happen, whether it happens in the first month of the season, the second month of the season, whether it happens in 2027, I'm not sure, but I'm betting that it's going to happen in year two. We're going to see him take on more. So I do think he belongs as a player that people should be going after, taking shots on this year. He's going a little bit later here in the sixth round than he was last year, but don't forget about Stevenson, because I got a great value there at the end and somebody that you can plug and play in your lineup.
Yeah, and I'll just say this as we go to break here, and we'll come back to this point in round seven. I did feel like that Quinshon Judkins at running back 21 represented kind of a drop-off in, maybe it's faux certainty, but to me, certainty at the position where, like, I know Quinshon Judkins is going to be the starting running back, the workhorse of his team. I think that's true of Bashel Tutin. I think that's true of Chuba Hubbard, but I have some questions about that. And those questions will extend in around seven when we get into the running back position. But we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we will talk about the seventh round in this draft. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Let's get into round seven of this mock draft. And it's an interesting group here of players. Starts off with Mike Evans, DeAndre Swift, Marvin Harrison Jr., Jadarian Price, David Montgomery, Christian Watson, Carnell Tate, Michael Wilson, Jordan Tyson, and Jaylen Warren. So all running backs and receivers. Boone, I wrote this in the write-up. I think these running backs here are perfect seventh rounders. You've got like a mix of, you know, kind of veterans where they're not going to get anybody excited, but each of them project for some key roles in the backfield with like Swift, Dave Montgomery, Jaylen Warren. And then just right in the middle there is Jadarian Price, like an exciting round one rookie. So yeah, again, I just think these are like perfect round seven type running back bets. Not sure things by any means, but a lot of appeal to these four guys. What'd you think about the seventh round?
I'm not overly interested in Jaylen Warren, and that might just be because I think Rico Dowdle is an interesting piece there. And with Mike McCarthy there and the history between them, Dowdle might take on enough work that it kind of saps some of the value from fantasy from Warren. But I really like the other three. DeAndre Swift was my pick here. And coming out of the draft, this was another backfield that I don't think people were talking about a ton in terms of potentially drafting somebody, but they definitely could have, and they didn't. And what does that mean? That means it's going to be the same thing as last year, which was DeAndre Swift leading the way, Kyle Manungai working in, complimentary guy, change of pace. He was valuable last year as well. But Swift was the RB14 in fantasy points per game on the season. And if you want to just look at like from week six on, when Manungai started to take on a little bit more of a role, Swift was even better for fantasy. He was the RB10 during that stretch, with Manungai being the RB26. So man, I don't see how Swift isn't going to have a pretty solid fantasy year, barring some sort of injury, in this offense that we think is going to continue to ascend. And they just don't have any competition for him, unless you think Manungai is going to take over. But I don't really know that I feel like Kyle Manungai is that player who's going to eventually emerge as this like true number one back. I think he fits that role that he's in pretty well. So Swift is really interesting to me. I think David Montgomery is going to be undervalued, even though, you know, he's going to this Houston Texans offense, but the last couple of years with the Lions hasn't put up really big stats, but now he's going to get his opportunity to do it again. And I think he's a really, really competent back. So very interested in him. And then Price it's a volume play. It's not that I really believe in the prospect, that I think he's going to be a superstar. It's that he's going to a great situation, and I don't feel that great about Emmanuel Wilson or our guy George Halland. I don't think those guys are going to come for him for a first-round rookie back. So I think it's going to be his backfield, especially early in the year. Maybe Zach Charbonnet will have something to say about that come December. But early in the season, I think Price is also somebody who should be targeted here. And we'll probably, we've seen this happen every year, right? A rookie running back with that kind of draft capital, yeah, he's probably going to get steamed up another round or maybe another few rounds by the time we get to the main draft season in the summer.
Yeah, I echo a lot of what you said about these guys here. And yeah, I'm with you on Jalen Warren. I actually took Rigo Dowdle in round eight, and I think he should. I think Rigo Dowdle should go ahead of Jalen Warren this year in drafts. Like, if you don't have, if Aaron Rodgers is not the quarterback of this team, which I think there's a chance he's not the quarterback of this team. Like, I don't, Jalen Warren, I think, is a little bit of a trouble there, because I think you're kind of counting on Jalen Warren inheriting some of those BS checkdowns that Kenneth Gainwell got last year if you're taking Jalen Warren ahead of Rico Dowdle. And again, I don't know that that's 100% going to happen. Receivers in this round are interesting. I do think, as I said earlier, that the round seven receivers really aren't all that different from the round nine, round 10. Like, it's a very flat zone of receivers here, but there are some really interesting picks, both Cardinals wide receivers. I took Michael Wilson because I think when one Arizona wide receiver goes off the board, that's your signal to go ahead and just take the next one. Both of the top two rookies went off the board here, but the pick I thought was really interesting is Christian Watson here at 7.06. Yeah. He had the best season of his pro career, in my opinion, in terms of just how he played on film. And he's definitely an injury risk. I get that. But I think one thing that people probably won't take into account this year, Boone, and this also extends to Jaden Reed and I guess Matthew Golden, but I have no idea what to think about Matthew Golden after his rookie year. Like, I don't have a strong take one way or another. But I know Watson and Reed are good at football. I think one thing that people won't take into account is this Packers receiver room doesn't look like it's going to rotate a bunch this year, man. Like, that Wicks moved on, Dobbs moved on, and the next guys up on the depth chart are like Savion Williams and Sky Moore, who's a returner. There's a real chance it is just a clear three receiver set of Watson, Golden, Reed, and Watson was awesome last year. I think that wide receiver 30, really nice value here for Christian Watson.
Yeah, there's always going to be some injury risk based on what we saw in prior years, but he managed to stay healthy last year and was the wide receiver 16 in fantasy points per game. Like, he showed us that ceiling, and there's really not much stopping him other than health from doing it again. And then, yeah, I really like Jaden Reed. We've talked about him a bunch on the show. I think he's certainly somebody that I want to draft. Matthew Golden, to me, is still more of a dart throw. He's going to have more of a role this year. We'll see if he can do something with it. But Watson is the play. Watson is a phenomenal talent when he's healthy. And if he can stay healthy again, man, this is a difference-making player. He has the big splash weeks.
Yep.
He can really help your fantasy team. So I think he's interesting. And then, yeah, I thought the rookies going in this range was also sort of the right area for these rookie receivers to go in. We might see them hit. Of course, I've talked about Carnell Tate and the volume I think he's going to get in year one in that Titans offense. So to get him here, you know, as a wide receiver three, basically, I think that's a smart play. And if he gets that kind of volume, you're going to profit taking him in this range.
No question about that. Okay, that is going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, after our last break of the show here, we are going to come back on the YouTube side of things and continue to break down our staff mock draft, the first one of the 2026 fantasy season. We're going to get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Let's get into the eighth round here. We're definitely in murky territory, certainly at the wide receiver position in this round, but there are some really good picks here. So round eight goes Mekhi Lemon, Sam Laporta, Rico Dowdle, Alec Pierce, Kyle Manungai, Cortland Sutton, Parker Washington, RJ Harvey, Jaden Daniels, and Tony Pollard. Boone, we teased it earlier, but I wrote up your Jaden Daniels pick in round eight as my favorite pick of this round. I might mess around and rank Jaden Daniels ahead of Lamar Jackson and definitely ahead of Jalen Hurts. And those guys went off the board several rounds earlier. So talk us through the Jaden Daniels pick here.
Well, I almost took him around earlier. I was going to do Terry McLaurin and then come around the turn into the seventh and take Jaden Daniels and have that pairing. And I just decided that there were still so many good quarterbacks on the board that why not wait? And even if I don't get that combo, I will get someone else like a Joe Burrow or whoever. And we saw those guys, like we mentioned earlier, fall to the ninth. But this is why I think, and it's not to continue to bury producer Colin here for the pick of Drake May in the fourth round. But like, if you look at this, the quarterbacks that I mentioned earlier, whether it's Daniels here, whether it's Joe Burrow in the ninth or Caleb Williams in the ninth, right? Would you rather have T. Higgins and Joe Burrow, or would you rather have Drake May and Ricky Pearsall? Because that's kind of what you're picking between in this range, yeah. Right? Would you rather have Josh Jacobs and Joe Burrow, or would you rather have Drake May and Blake Corum? Like, those are just much different players, where the difference in the quarterback, I don't really think there's that much of a difference. I think Jaden Daniels, Joe Burrow, and even Caleb Williams, as that offense continues to ascend, yeah. I think all those guys have top five, maybe even better. Like, would it shock you if Daniels comes back, stays healthy, looks more like he did in his rookie season, and puts up a great total, maybe even challenges for a top two, top three spot at quarterback and fantasy scoring? I think that's definitely within his range of outcomes. There's risk, of course, because of his running style and the pounding that he takes, and he might miss time. But I'm also willing to deal with that because you can find other guys to step in. Last year, his backup, Marcus Mariota, came in and gave you 70, 80% of what Daniels often gave right. you, and you just threw him into your lineup. Or if you're that worried, you could do like you're talking about, and outside of all these picks that we made in this mock draft, there's still guys like Brock Purdy and Dak Prescott and some really solid names still available.
Yeah.
So you could grab a second quarterback to pair with him if you're that worried.
I couldn't agree more. I think late round quarterback is back this year. I think it's back this year, where like the previous few seasons, I've been really interested in investing in those top level, you know, vanity quarterbacks. And I'm still like, that was, again, not to say it for the 100th time. That was why I was down to make the Colson Loveland pick and then just punt quarterback, because I do think, like, if we did the same exercise, would I rather have insert receiver that went in the third round and Sam Laporta, or Colson Loveland and, you know, I took like Michael Wilson in the last, like, I think I'd rather take Colson Loveland and Michael Wilson as opposed to the inverse of that. Like, I think there's a drop off at tight end after Tyler Warren and Tucker Kraft. So again, that's why I made that decision to do that. But I'm totally with you about quarterbacks, where I think Josh Allen is secure at quarterback one. But what you said about, hey, the running style and taking a pounding and injuries, Lamar Jackson's QB2, and we saw that happen with him last year. And he's an older player now than Jaden Daniels is. I mean, Drake May is the guy who, I mean, he's pretty well built, but he took a pounding last year. Tons of sacks. The offensive line, it should be better. We'll see. It should be better. But still, like, I mean, all these guys, I think, are pretty similar all the way down. Like, Jackson Dart didn't even get drafted in this draft. And I feel really good about Jackson Dart as a fantasy quarterback, especially if he's coming in, like, if he's going to be my 11th round pick, you know, in this hypothetical exercise where yeah. I didn't take one. So, yeah, I think we're on the same page about quarterback this year. It's a good year to wait on that position. The rest of these picks here, man, I mean, the running backs are all like maybe backups. You know, Kyle Manungai, RJ Harvey, probably running back two, starters on shaky offenses. Anyone else really stand out to you from this range? I mean, like I said, the receivers, tons of variance here between Pierce, who's had an offseason surgery, and Parker Washington and Cortland Sutton, for sure. Anyone stand out? Anyone else stand out to you from this round?
I really like Mekhi Lemon, and I've mentioned it on the show before. If people want to go back and listen to us talk about that, they can go back to the draft recap show. They could go back to the mock draft show we did with Tice last week. Lots of talk about Mekhi Lemon, not just his dynasty value, but also I think he could come in, and assuming that AJ Brown trade goes through soon, then he's going to get hyped up, I think, for fantasy from that point on. I think that's when people are really going to get excited about him. And even we saw him out on the practice field this past week, and people were getting excited about some of the practice drills he was doing, right? I think there, when you talk about a first round receiver, a guy going to an offense that we know can be good for fantasy, that we think is going to be a little better this year than what we saw last year, I think people are going to get excited about him. So I think nice taking him in this range. Parker Washington is someone, and not to get into the Jags receiver conversation, but I think he's an interesting pick in this area because he finished the season so strong. I don't take him on a lot of teams, but I think this is the right spot to take a player like him. And then, yeah, like Rico Dowdle, Tony Pollard, there's going to be value there. They're going to have games, and I think this is the right area to take them. But yeah, it's not an overly exciting round from a fantasy standpoint, which is also why I'm glad I used it on taking a quarterback.
Right, and we'll just go right into round nine here, because the other two Jaguars receivers came off the board in this round. And as I keep going on and on about here, I just don't find these round nine receivers really any different from the guys who went two rounds ahead of them. So this was the round here. Brian Thomas Jr., Chris Godwin, Bo Nix, Joe Burrow, Kyle Pitts, Caleb Williams, Jacoby Myers, Ricky Pearsall, Josh Downs, Blake Corum. Not to keep glazing you here, Boone, as the kids say, Chris Godwin's a smash pick at this range. Emeka Ebuka went obviously much, much earlier. He went round six here. I don't mind Emeka Ebuka at wide receiver 26, and I'm not going to say I'm going to rank it this way. It wouldn't totally surprise me if Chris Godwin, healthier this year, like out is the most productive Bucs receiver. So again, I like these receiver bets in round nine. Not that there's risk for all of these guys, don't get me wrong, but there's also pretty credible upside cases for guys like Pearsall or Downs and even Chris Godwin, kind of the old boring veteran.
Yeah, we've seen Chris Godwin do it before. We've seen him finish as a fantasy wide receiver one, a top 10, top 12 guy. He's done it multiple times. Whether he has enough left in the tank coming off, you know, the injuries that he's had. And yeah, maybe eventually now he'll be a little further removed from that and he'll get back to something closer to what was his peak form. It's a riskier bet, but it's not that risky in the ninth round, right? It's just maybe unlikely to occur, but there is still a path for him to have a really solid fantasy season. And at wide receiver 39, I think that one's a slam dunk. What do you think about Kyle Pitts here? Because this is the one for me where I see a lot of people take him. I see a lot of people take him, and I just keep coming back to that same thing, Harmon, which was when Drake London, and I know it's a new coaching staff, but when Drake London was on the field last year, Kyle Pitts was not a solid fantasy play, and it was only when London was removed from the picture that we saw Pitts put up those monster games. And I feel like fantasy managers are just going to remember those really big games, and they're not going to remember the context around it. And if Drake London is healthy this year, I just don't know that I have a lot of faith that Kyle Pitts is going to be a solid fantasy play week in and week out.
Yeah. To answer the question, what I wrote in the write-up when I called Kyle Pitts the most intriguing pick from round nine was, I have no idea what to make of Kyle Pitts in 2026. Like I have no clue. he did have a breakout year on paper. However, and I know this is not, you know, not great to do, but if you take out that 40-point eruption in week 15 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when Drake London didn't play, I mean, it was like a fine, you know, it was fine. It was a fine season for Kyle Pitts. So, yeah, he looks great from, a full season perspective. The stats look great, but I just really have no idea what to do. I have no idea what to do. There were rumors that they wanted to trade him, but they don't have other than the great Jahan Dotson, who I still have the candle lit for, they don't really have a credible receiver too. They took Zachariah Branch in round three. It's just, like, there's a path for Kyle Pitts, but I don't know that I'm going to be the one that takes the discovery journey.
I'm laughing too, because I hope I didn't shoot myself in the foot on this one, because I'm trying at the moment to trade him to multiple managers in a dynasty league that I'm doing while our rookie draft's going on. So hopefully they're not listening to this. Yes, trade for Kyle Pitts. Definitely come take him off my hands and give me something decent in return.
I have Kyle Pitts on a dynasty team, and I think this might finally be the time to trade him as well. So hopefully nobody in the league that I have is listening to this as well. Because we've been mean to producer Colin, I'm just going to give him a shout out for taking Josh Downs at the end of this round. I thought that was a really good pick. I liked my pick of Ricky Pearsall right ahead of Josh Downs. And again, like, is there really that big of a difference between the upside case for Ricky Pearsall and Josh Downs versus, you know, Carnell Tate and Jordan Tyson in round seven, or even, you know, Michael Wilson and Marvin Harrison Jr. who went that round? I don't think so. So a pretty nice group of receivers in round nine. And look at that. We didn't even talk about the Jaguars wide receivers, because guess what, folks? We'll talk about that 3,000 times more before week one gets rolling here, and probably 2,500 times before training camp gets started. Okay, round 10, the final one here. We saw a lot of people just kind of fill out their rosters here. So we saw a lot of tight ends go off the board here. Chris Rodriguez, Aronde Gadsden, Jonathan Brooks, Quentin Johnson, Harold Fannin Jr., Jaden Reed, Isaiah Likely, Dallas Goedert, Ramondre Stevenson, and DK Metcalf. Boone, I'll give you the floor. What stands out to you from this round?
I think Jonathan Brooks is a solid pick in this range, but I want to use it as an opportunity to talk about that backfield because to me,
yes,
I think this is my pick. Chuba Hubbard's backfield.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Now, I'm not knocking your pick. This is not a knock on the pick because I think in this round, this is where Jonathan Brooks should go. But
okay.
I see a lot of people right now talking about this as if Jonathan Brooks is just guaranteed to come in and take over that backfield this year. And I feel like it's very far from a guarantee. A lot of the quotes that I feel like I'm hearing coming out of the team, even from Brooks himself, makes it sound like he's still working his way back, that they're hoping that he's going to get cleared and be ready to go and be able to contribute. Not that this is going to be a guy that's just going to come in and kick the door down and take over the backfield, where Chuba Hubbard's done this before. And if you take away the injury last year, I wonder if he would have had a much better season last year and whether he would have even given up his starting job to Rico Dowdle midway through the year. I think the injury was a big part of that. And we've talked about how when he came back, it seemed like maybe he rushed back and he wasn't quite himself and Dowdle looked like a much better back than him. 2 years ago, Chuba Hubbard was basically an RB1 for fantasy. And could I see a scenario where he gets back to being that this year? Absolutely. So I just think people are going to get really excited, as fantasy managers always do. They get very excited about the younger player, the new exciting guy, the guy that's never done it before, sleeper, breakout, that sort of thing. When in this backfield, to me, I think the kind of boring veteran guy is the better pick, even though he's going earlier. I would much rather have him as the guy. But like I said, this one's not a knock on where you took him. I think value-wise, this is totally the spot to take Brooks and all of those types of running backs, like Chris Rodriguez, who could earn a big role in that backfield, like Blake Corum, who went with the last pick of the round before, who certainly is in position to have a pretty solid, you know, volume in that backfield. And also, if we see a Kyren Williams injury, Blake Corum basically wins you your league, right? So I think this range is where you take those guys. I just want to continue to kind of hammer that point home about Hubbard and Brooks, because I just feel like too many people are acting like Brooks is inevitable and he's going to take over here. And I don't think that's guaranteed.
This is hilarious because I had like a completely different interpretation of the, of why, just to be, again, I wrote this in the article to be fully transparent. I mostly took Jonathan Brooks just so we could discuss him on the podcast. Okay. Like, but I wanted to take him in round 10 just so we could talk about him on the podcast, because my thought was almost, again, completely different from you in that I feel like most people are going to see this and be like, Jonathan Brooks? Because my guess is for those who are not as plugged in as you are, Boone, you know, the folks who this is your job, you're well compensated for this, as you should be. You're, you know, mainlining updates. You're talking about the Twitter, you know, you're seeing what people are talking about on fantasy Twitter. For the people who are, you know, outside on May 5th and not scrolling through the news, they might, and I'm inside here with you, pal. So we're on the same page on this. It is not June yet. I am very much still inside. If the people who are not just fully locked in on the news and the updates and everything might not be aware that, yeah, like Jonathan Brooks probably is going to play this year. At the very least, he's going to play and he's going to have a shot to be the running back too. He's feeling pretty good about his health. Part of the reason why they've just let Rico Dowdle walk out the door was some confidence in Jonathan Brooks's knee. The quotes are, you know, nothing to get crazy about, but he is feeling good about it. And the only other running back on the roster is what, by the way, I guess it's Trevor Achan. I don't know if he's come out and said this, but like obviously Travis, his brother, Travis Achan, has said, no, it's not Travis Etienne, it's Travis Achan. So I'm guessing that applies to Trevor too. Although I don't, tell me if you've seen the update. I haven't, on Trevor correcting the record on his name. So we'll do some investigative journalism on that, but that's the only other running back they have on the roster. So yeah, I agree with you, Chuba Hubbard, good pick where he's going, but I do think Jonathan Brooks in like double digit rounds is well worth taking the chance on.
I just quickly looked it up, and I will tip the hat to you here because, yes, even in best ball right now, we're looking at an ADP of 126 for Jonathan Brooks. So, yeah, I guess the overall, the fantasy community has not totally moved him up to this range, and perhaps I am seeing too much of, you know, the our friends in the industry and whatnot who are talking him up quite a bit, or me constantly seeing every update on him. So that's a good point. But
that's why you're locked in, pal. That's why you're the GOAT.
Let's just hammer down on the one point here. Like I said, you should look to take backups and guys who, you know, have a chance to potentially earn more. But even some of those guys who are just like the number two back who are one injury away, but the guys who we know for sure, the strong options like Blake Corum and guys like that, some of the top, you know, backup running backs, not the ones that we're like speculating maybe this guy will be the number two. You need to know for sure, but those guys should go in this range. And I feel like far too often in redraft, I see those guys fall much further into the later rounds, but they're very valuable to have. And once you've filled out your starting lineup, which normally by this point you have, or you've made a conscious decision not to, like you did with quarterback, or sometimes people are playing the late round tight end game, you normally filled out most of your lineup there. So you can look at these backup running backs that have that kind of league winning upside. And I will agree that Jonathan Brooks, in the perfect scenario, has that kind of league winning upside. I think I'm just a little more skeptical in terms of him coming back from the serious injuries and him really, you know, not being able to, or being able to avoid another one and not succumbing to another injury, because we had multiple serious knee injuries for him now. So I think there's a big injury question mark around him. We're rooting for him. I would love to see him have a great career, but make sure in this range of drafts, you start to shift your focus and bump up some of those strong backups, guys that have an opportunity to potentially carve out a role or start, and guys that you know for sure are going to do well if the starter goes down on their team.
Yeah, and again, in the spirit of full transparency here, I may have spent an early rookie pick on Jonathan Brooks a couple of years ago that I'm just like hoping turns into something. I mean, for God's sake, turn into something for Jonathan Brooks. So yeah, I want to talk about it on the podcast. Also wanted to, you know, wish cast it into the future. There are other interesting picks in this range. I love Jaden Reed in this range. The tight ends are really interesting. Probably no thanks for me on like the Isaiah Likelys and Dallas Goedert here, but Harold Fannin, we talked about him as a post-draft loser. If he's going to fall to the 10th round, that's fine with me. What do you, just last thing before we go, what do you make of Aronde Gadsden? I wrote him up as the most interesting pick in this round. I have no idea what to think about Gadsden. At one point, talk about like the fantasy Twitter updates. Your entire timeline was talking about how he was the next great thing in like October or November or whatever. Really faded along with the rest of the Chargers offense. So I don't know how much of that has to do with him. They've added Charlie Kolar as the blocking guy. They added Alec Ingold as a fullback. There you had David Njoku in for a visit recently. Obviously, Gadsden still can have a role totally separate of those guys, but I just think from a fantasy perspective, he's another one that I have no idea what to do with from a rankings perspective, or like I just think there's a high ceiling, sure, potentially, but I also think there's a pretty low floor for a guy like this.
Yeah, another player who I think fantasy managers might focus in on that really strong stretch of the season that you referenced there, where it was double-digit fantasy points in four straight games and looked like he was going to be potentially a league winner, or at least a really massive difference maker from the tight end position. And then over his final eight outings, he only topped double-digit fantasy points twice, right? It was not the same offense, and you can make a lot of excuses, but still, it was a very small sample size where he put up those great numbers. New coaching staff there. I just look at it, and I think there's still a bunch of other options that are going to factor in that kind of pushes him down the pecking order and makes me a little less excited for him. I need to see more before I start to buy in. So I have him probably lower than most, definitely not in this range. I would have him down in the sort of fringe low end tight end one, high end tight end two kind of range. Not somebody who I find myself drafting very often at all, trying to acquire in Dynasty or anything like that, because I think there's other guys that I like more. And of course, Harold Fannin Jr. going after him is a massive value there. But I think Aronde Gadsden or Isaiah Likely, like I might bet on Likely having the better year this year, right? Like that's the range that he belongs in. It's behind those guys. It's nowhere near the tier above him in my mind, but it's a wide range of outcomes for sure for him.
No question. All right. That is going to do it for today's show. Boone, This was a great breakdown. Really enjoyed going through the staff mock draft with you. And you're going to be out for a few shows now, right? So you're taking some time. You're all that talk about how you're getting all the Twitter updates. You're going to be doing some unplugging here, I hope, in the next few weeks.
I mean, I never fully unplug. Like, I'm always getting the notifications to my phone about every injury update, every quote, all that stuff. But yeah, I'm going to show you how it's done. I will take vacation for a couple weeks. You can watch me do it, and then you can follow that blueprint when you're off in June.
That's right. Yeah, I'm going to learn from the master here about how to take one of these things that people are calling a vacation. Sounds interesting. So you let me know how yours goes. And then I'll try to follow it up here as well. But yes, Boone will be out for a few shows, but he will be back in short order. In the meantime, this show rolls on Thursday. Scott Pianowski is going to join me as he reveals his post-draft fantasy offensive power ranking. So make sure you're tuned in for that one. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We've got a ton of great content coming for you this summer, and certainly once the calendars really turn to the fantasy football season. Until then, we are out.